on postcards and posters in people's kitchens, the kind that they'd been talking about in school today. Ms. Hussey was always saying, "Listen to your own thinking." Well, what if he, and not those museum people, was the one to decide what was wonderful to look at? What would he choose? The same stuff that was now famous? Probably not the French lady with the too small dress. Art, for him, was something puzzling. Yes, something that gave his mind a new idea to spin around. Something that gave him a fresh way of seeing things each time he looked at it. What was he remembering? He crawled under his bed and dragged out a dusty crate filled with green army men. He dug down into the corner and pulled out a small box. Calder held the box carefully in both hands. It was made of a dark wood, and the corners were covered with inlaid silver vines. The painting on the top showed a man with ponytail-length hair leaning over a table. He was dressed in a fancy bathrobe, and his face was turned thoughtfully toward a window. A tool that resembled a compass was held lightly in his right hand. A large roll of paper lay under his right arm. There was a wrinkled oriental rug bunched up on the corner of the table in front of him, and his left hand rested on what appeared to be a book. A globe sat high on the cupboard behind him. His expression looked as though he'd been thinking important thoughts, and something had, just in that moment, interrupted him. Calder felt a sense of understanding, of sympathy for this man. This was what he felt like when he suddenly had to pay attention in school. Calder had always loved this picture. Reaching for his magnifying glass, he held it over the top of the box. He saw light sparkle from the old glass in the window, and the rug came alive with blues and warm golden tones. On the tall cupboard was written the word mirror. Mirror, mirror. He rolled the word around in his mind. He wished Grandma Ranjana had told him more. He tried to remember exactly when she had given him the box. He had been small enough to sit on her lap and play with her reading glasses. He might have been 4 or 5. He could remember her blue velvet rocker, the cracks on her knuckles, her gentle cheeks the color of dark chocolate. Grandma Ranjana had loved puzzles and mysteries and would have approved of Ms. Hussey. Calder grabbed the box and rushed downstairs. He would take a rainbow bath, as Grandma Ranjana used to call it. On late afternoons in the fall, the sun came through the leaded glass window in the Palais living room and threw rainbows and wavery rhombi and polygons on the floor, the walls, the backs of chairs and sofas. This parade of soft color traveled slowly up one side of the room and vanished in the corner of the ceiling. Grandma Ranjana always swore that sitting in geometry helped the brain. Calder began to write. "The man in my hand looks toward the window, and the light lands on one arm and one cheek and the paper on his table. You know the way paper gets blinding in a bright light? Well, this paper almost makes you squint. The colors around him are blue and red and light brown. A scrunched-up rug is on the edge of the table between him and me, as if someone tossed it up there when they were cleaning the floor and forgot to put it back. And now for weight and size. This thing is about as heavy as a bag of chocolate chip cookies, or maybe an empty spaghetti sauce jar, or a large t-shirt. It is about as thick as a dictionary and as long as a medium tube of toothpaste." Calder paused, the box in his right hand, and he looked at the rainbows floating on the far wall. He realized with a shiver of pleasure that the afternoon light was landing on his body in a way that was similar to the fall of light in the picture, and he wondered if he also looked like he was thinking great thoughts. He was interrupted by loud voices outside the front window. When he peered out, he saw Miss Hussey and Mr. Watch, his boss from Powell's. What on earth were they doing? And then Calder noticed an old lady sitting on the ground between them. When he opened his front door, Ms. Hussey shouted, "Water! Get some water!" By the time he was back with a glass, the old lady was standing. Calder didn't recognize her. Ms. Hussey said, "Thanks, Calder. I didn't know you lived right here." She explained what Mr. Watch had just told her. He usually walked Mrs. Sharp to Powell's once a week to pick out some books. Ms. Hussey had happened to be just behind them. She'd seen Mrs. Sharp stumble and sink to the curb. Mr. Watch looked embarrassed. Mrs. Sharp looked irritated.
"What would I need water for?" she snapped. "Stupid, these new shoes. A grasshopper couldn't walk in them."
Was she calling Ms. Hussey stupid? If so, Ms. Hussey didn't seem to notice. She offered Mrs. Sharp her arm. Calder went back inside and watched from his front window until he couldn't see the three of them anymore. That evening, Calder got a letter. Ripping it open, he grinned. Who else would send him an encoded communication? He hurried up to his room to dig out the pentomino code that he'd made for himself and Tommy before his friend left. Calder decoded the message. "Calder, name of kid next door is Frog. Vanished last week. I think kidnapped. Have to stay inside. Mom afraid. New York stinks. Tommy." Worried, he went down to the kitchen to tell his parents the news. Everyone in the Palais household felt bad. Moving to a new neighborhood was hard enough, but having the kid next door suddenly disappear seemed like a bad joke. Tommy had never known his real father. During the past winter, his mom, Zelda, who worked in the university library, took a vacation with two other women. They went to Bermuda. She came back with a husband. At first, Tommy was very quiet and didn't want to talk about old Fred, as he started calling him. Fred tried hard to be a dad. He played baseball with Tommy in the park. He came to school and met many of the teachers. He took Tommy and Calder to 53rd Street for hot fudge sundaes all the time and let them get any size they wanted. After a while, it seemed like Tommy was starting to like him. And then, old Fred announced, last July 4th, Calder remembered the date because it took the bang right out of the fireworks, that the family would need to move to New York. He had bought a house in the suburbs without even telling Tommy's mom. "And of course not the kid," Tommy had said when telling Calder. And now this Frog business. What kind of a name was Frog, anyway? Calder wrote Tommy right back. "Tommy, so sorry about Frog. Maybe you can solve mystery and be hero. Be careful. Calder." Tommy had always liked spying. Maybe this was an opportunity not to be a mediocre kid. Calder smiled, remembering their conversation in the kitchen when he had first gotten his pentominoes. He hoped his message would help. After writing the letter and sealing the envelope, it occurred to Calder that this was bad advice. What if something horrible really had happened to the kid next door? Whoever was responsible wouldn't want another kid snooping around. Calder's parents had told him that the chances of it being a real kidnapping were small. He hoped they were right. Chapter 7. The Man on the Wall. When Ms. Hussey read the piece of writing aloud at the end of the week, there was a shuffling and a looking around for who seemed embarrassed or who looked too pleased.
"A strange chair? Modern art with things hanging from it?
Does the writer want to stay anonymous, or do you want to tell us what this is?" Ms. Hussey asked after several guesses had been made. Silence. Petra cleared her throat.
"Well, it's a special book."
Petra thought suddenly of the calm, intelligent woman in her dream, the woman in the yellow jacket. She probably never had to explain her writing. And suddenly, Petra felt the woman was sort of keeping her company, whispering, "It doesn't matter what they say. I understand."
"A book," snorted Denise. "Berries and smelly pants?"
Petra's mouth closed in a tight line. Miss Hussey turned toward Denise.
"Yes, unexpected similes can carry the power of surprise. They're refreshing, aren't they?"
Denise looked as if she had smelled something bad. Calder was impressed by Petra's writing and wished it were his own. An hour later, in the cafeteria, he spotted Petra in a corner by herself. He decided to join her. He wanted to tell her about the threesome outside his house yesterday and how much he liked her description. He was imagining how surprised Petra would be to have his company. It was then that Calder's lunchbox collided with the back of a chair and popped open. Petra heard the bang and watched his bologna sandwich, now airborne, cross the table with impressive speed. By the time Calder retrieved his sandwich and sat down, she had begun to laugh.
All right," Calder said.
"It's just that I was reading about inexplicable loud noises and things falling from the sky, and there was this whop and then a flying."
She was gasping.
"It's not you, just so perfect."
"What are you reading?"
"The book I wrote about. I found it at Powell's yesterday."
Calder saw that it said "low" on the spine. Weird title. No wonder she was trying to cover it up.
"It's by this guy, Charles Fort, who spent a lot of his life looking for newspaper articles about unexplained stuff," Petra said. "You know, like weird lights in the sky, objects traveling through rooms without any visible explanation, ghosts, crazy things like that. He talks about how blind and idiotic he thinks a lot of our education is. And he's funny. He doesn't take anyone's thinking too seriously, including his own."
She paused, surprised at herself for saying so much.
"I love hearing about people who figure things out for themselves. Plus, I love to think about things that no one understands. Yet."
Calder's mouth was full.
"Almost anywhere you look in here, there's something amazing. Listen to this."
Petra flipped to the middle of the book. "There have been many mysterious disappearances of human beings. Chicago Tribune, January 5th, 1900. Sherman Church, a young man employed in the Augusta Mills, Battle Creek, Michigan, has disappeared. He was seated in the company's office when he arose and ran into the mill. He has not been seen since. The mill has been almost taken to pieces by the searchers, and the river, woods, and country have been scoured." And then, "Records of six persons who between January 14, 1920 and December 9, 1923 were found wandering in or near the small town of Romford, Essex, England, unable to tell how they got there or anything else about themselves." Calder had stopped chewing and was staring at her.
"Tommy knows a kid called Frog, a kid in New York, who just disappeared."
"Frog?" Petra started to laugh again. "A flying frog."
Calder kind of wanted to laugh too, but the news wasn't supposed to be funny. What was she talking about anyway?
"Do you believe this guy, Fort?"
As soon as Calder said it, he wished he hadn't. It wasn't really what he meant. Petra's face closed, and she looked disappointed.
"Well, part of what is so neat is that he worked from newspapers. I know most people would think this was completely stupid."
Abruptly, Petra started to gather her things, stuffing low into her lunch bag. This wasn't going well. Calder did understand Petra's excitement. It was just that he hadn't wanted to look like an idiot again. Plus, the frog connection had been such a weird coincidence. Before Petra could get up, he blurted,
"Your writing was great, and also, I saw Miss Hussey, an old lady called Mrs. Sharp, and Mr. Watch, my boss from Powell's, outside my house yesterday. They were all there together."
Petra no longer looked unfriendly.
"Mrs. Who?"
Sharp. At least that's what it sounded like.
Petra pulled out her book again. She opened to the first page and turned it toward Calder.
Strange, huh?
Louise Coffin Sharp, Calder read. Do you think that's her? I could find out, he said as if there was nothing to it.
Okay.
Petra beamed at him.
Thanks, I'd love to know. I didn't think the first owner would still be alive.
The next day was Saturday, and Calder arrived at Powell's early. Mr. Watch was seated behind the front counter, frowning over what looked like a letter.
Ah, yes. I need you to make a delivery.
Mr. Watch refolded the letter.
I'm sending you down the street with some books. The name is Sharp.
Calder grinned. Events were fitting together now with the precision of pentominoes. He ventured,
Would that be Louise Sharp?
Mr. Watch looked stern.
Yes, but not to you.
He handed Calder a paper bag filled with books. On the way over, Calder peeked into the bag. There were some novels in French and a new book about art by David Hockney. It looked like the kind of thing Miss Hussey would read. There was also a small, beat-up book called An Experiment in Time. When Calder flipped to the table of contents, he saw that Chapter 2 was called The Puzzle. Mrs. Sharp must not be all bad. If she recognized Calder, she didn't let on. He decided not to remind her about the glass of water. Calder noticed that she had unusually green eyes, a sea green surrounded by lots of wrinkles and bones. She asked him to wait in the living room while she got a check. He looked around. He was standing on a huge oriental carpet. Velvet cushions, naked sculpture, glass cabinets. The place was a museum. And in the corner, on a neatly organized desk, sat a large, fancy computer. Then he saw it. Calder couldn't believe his eyes. There, hanging over the sofa, was a big version of the painting on his box.
Do you know what that is?
Her voice made him jump.
I was going to ask you. You see, my grandma gave me a box with that guy, I mean, that painting, on the cover, and I was going to try to find out who did it, and I just did some homework that describes it. That's so strange, isn't it?
Mrs. Sharp sniffed and handed Calder the check.
Well, not really. That's a print of a Vermeer painting called The Geographer. There must be thousands of them around.
Oh, who is Vermeer? I know I've heard his name, but you know.
Calder, still surprised, was warming up to the situation.
He was Dutch and painted in the 17th century.
She paused, looking thoughtfully at Calder's enthusiastic grin.
I'm sure you could find a book in your school library that told you something about him.
Wow, this is just so perfect.
Calder, in his excitement, was already headed for the front door. Then he remembered Petra's book.
Hey, Mrs. Sharp, could I ask you a question? It's about Lo, a book a friend of mine, Petra Andely, found at Powell's, and, well, I think maybe it has your name in it.
Mrs. Sharp was dreadfully silent for a moment. What was she thinking? When she spoke, her voice was soft.
Do you understand the book?
Calder looked up. He couldn't tell from her face whether this was a trick question.
Part of it, anyway, he lied. I mean, we both really like the stuff about weird things happening that nobody understands, like people who disappear. And it's cool that he found all that in newspapers.
I didn't think anybody read books like that anymore.
Mrs. Sharp looked almost human now. Encouraged, Calder blurted,
Oh, yes, all the time.
Oh, no, he'd gone too far.
Come for tea one day after school. Bring your friend, and we will talk about Charles Fort.
Mrs. Sharp's voice was now icy.
4 o'clock.
She turned to open the door, and Calder knew he was being dismissed.
Okay, I will.
The door shut in his face. Calder walked back toward Powell's in a daze.
My friend, Petra?
He hoped she would become his friend, and fast. There was no way he'd go back to talk about that low stuff on his own. How did he get himself into this? Monday morning was blue and white, and everything was blowing. Cumulus clouds, bare branches, scraps of rubbish. Calder stepped out his front door and saw Petra chasing a piece of paper up the block toward the Castiglione's. As he watched, the paper shot skyward in a graceful loop and headed over the roof of the Castiglione's treehouse and toward the train tracks. Petra stopped.
"Darn," she said. "That letter was half buried in your garden. I only got to read the beginning, but it said something about an old crime and art."
She shrugged.
"Probably just some crazy advertisement anyway. Not a real letter at all."
"I've been thinking about that Charles House book," Calder began.
"Fort,"
Petra tried not to smile.
"And something else."
Calder took a deep breath.
"Mrs. Sharp, that is her book, and she's interested that we, I mean you, know about it. She wants to meet you."
Petra had stopped walking.
"Seriously?"
"She wants us to have tea with her one day. She just kind of announced it."
Calder looked at the tops of the trees as if they'd been invited too. What would he do if Petra wouldn't go? Mrs. Sharp would soon realize he'd lied about reading low. Petra was silent for a moment.
"Wait, how did you talk to her?"
Calder explained about his job at Powell's and the delivery yesterday. The rest of the walk to school, they talked about coincidence, agreeing that it didn't always seem to be accidental. And Petra shared some of Charles Fort's ideas about looking carefully at things. Calder wanted to tell her about his box and about the coincidence of seeing the geographer on Mrs. Sharp's wall, but didn't. Miss Hussey hadn't read Calder's description aloud yet, and he was hoping Petra would like it. They agreed that there was a great deal to be figured out in the world. Petra confided that she thought Miss Hussey might be willing to let them collect strange data the way Fort did. That is, if kids like Denise didn't wreck it for everyone.
"Maybe data about art. Art and unexplained stuff," Petra blurted.
"Petra, you're amazing."
How could he ever have thought that wedge of hair was anything but brainy? Petra's mouth twisted strangely.
"You'd better read that book before you agree with me. You might not be as crazy as I am."
He laughed and stirred the pentominoes in his pocket happily. This year was getting better all the time. Calder borrowed Petra's copy of Low that afternoon. She was right. Fort was an extraordinary thinker. He looked fearlessly at occurrences that no one could explain. Even better, he looked everywhere for patterns. Calder understood the man's fascination with connecting things that didn't seem related, and he admired the way Fort challenged the experts. How could Mrs. Sharp ever have gotten tired of such an exciting book? Speaking of Mrs. Sharp, he had some detective work to do. The reproduction of the geographer in his library book was clearer and brighter than the copy of the painting on his box. Behind the man was a framed map, and above that, the signature I. Vermeer, and under that, M.D.C.L.X.V.I.I.I. Calder counted. 1,000 plus 500 plus 100 plus 50 plus 10 plus 5 plus 3. 1668. The artist's full name was Johannes Vermeer, also known as Jan Vermeer, and he was from the Netherlands in northern Europe. The book explained that no one knew for sure who the geographer was, but that the area where Vermeer lived was a center for mapmakers. It talked about how people with money liked to hang maps on the walls of their houses to show that they were wealthy and that they thought about the world. Map-making was a respected profession, something between a science and an art. Calder flipped back and forth in the book, looking at some of the other Vermeer paintings. Most of them showed people in front of a window. The geographer's rug appeared in many of the paintings, and the same yellow jacket turned up in a number of places. The pictures made you feel as though you were peeking in at someone else's private moment. The light that came from outside made ordinary objects seem important. A quill pen, a pitcher with milk, an earring, the brass buttons that were part of a straight-back chair. It occurred to Calder that there could be hidden information here. After all, codes involved repetition, and the same objects appeared again and again in Vermeer's work. There was the obvious geometry of window panes and floor tiles, and then all the pearls, baskets, pictures, and framed maps. There was symmetry, both complete and carefully broken. Calder read more. The book said that Vermeer died penniless when he was in his 40s, and that almost nothing was known about his life. No one understood why such a fabulous painter had made only 35 works of art. No one knew who the people he painted were, or why he painted the things he did. No one knew how he became an artist. Vermeer had left behind more questions than answers. Chapter 8, A Halloween Surprise. On the morning of Sunday, October 31st, Petra overheard her dad telling her mom that he just wasn't up for Halloween.
"Frank, think of the kids!"
Her mom sounded tense. Then Petra heard her dad's rumble and parts of what he said.
"Sorry, honey. Letter in the mail this week. You'll see. Be over before we know it."
He'd given her mom a hug. What letter? And what had happened to the one that was torn up? What would be over? Did their family need money? Would they have to move? Petra suddenly longed to tell Ms. Hussey what she'd just realized. Important letters couldn't be talked about because they always held secrets. Ms. Hussey must never have gotten one, or she'd know that. Harper Avenue was in its element on Halloween. People came from miles around to walk down the block where Petra and Calder lived, and families took pride in becoming as frightening as possible. Graves sprang up in front yards, complete with scattered bones, headstones, and shovels. Tarantulas looped from gutters, and pumpkins flashed and growled. Corpses hanging from second-story windows swung gently in the darkness. Chocolate eyeballs rolled underfoot. A mesh of webs covered bushes and porches, and crackly voices and organ music came from flower beds. For the kids who lived on the block, costumes were a big deal. At 4 that afternoon, Petra was struggling to tie ribbons in her hair. Bouncy and curly, it didn't like the idea of being pulled back so tightly. Petra finally yanked out all of the ribbons and made a tight ponytail and a tidy bun. She then fastened the already tied ribbons on with bobby pins. Next, she put on her homemade earrings. They were large white beads that hung on a hoop. She looked different, quite definitely. The train roared by outside the window, and Petra stood still, watching her earrings tremble with the vibrations. She put on her jacket with the fake fur collar and cuffs. She had sewn carefully trimmed pieces of an old Dalmatian costume onto a yellow sweater. She was ready. Lowering her lids a fraction of an inch and smiling a smile that was more an idea than a movement, she looked at herself sideways in the mirror. She felt filled, at least for that moment, with the easy elegance of the writer in her dream. When Petra opened the door, there was Calder on her front porch wearing a large red letter made out of taped together cardboard squares.
"Hi, Calder."
"Petra."
She suddenly wished she hadn't done all that stuff to her hair and instinctively pulled back out of the light.
"You look like something I've seen. I mean, just like a painting."
"I do," Petra mumbled.
"How did you think of dressing up like her?"
"Like who?"
Petra looked at Calder directly now, frowning slightly.
"The lady with the feather pen. The lady at the desk."
Calder tried to protect his pentomino costume as Petra pulled him into her front hall.
Tell me exactly what you're talking about.
Look out, now you've bent my F, Calder said crossly. What are you so upset about?
I'm sorry, it's just that you recognized my costume. You see, I dreamed about it.
What do you mean, you dreamed that painting?
I didn't say it was a painting. I don't know what it was.
Weird. I have your picture at home. Come over and see for yourself.
They were down Petra's steps and up Calder's in seconds. Once inside, Calder ducked out of his F and flew up the stairs. When he reappeared, he was carrying an oversized library book. He sat on the floor and leafed quickly through the reproductions. Petra knelt beside him.
There!
Petra's stomach gave a sickening lurch. It was not only her costume. It was the woman in her dream. She touched the reproduction with her hand, as if to be sure it was really there. The caption next to it read, Johannes Vermeer, A Lady Writing, 1665. Chapter 9, The Blue Ones. Calder and Petra found three other paintings of the woman in the yellow jacket. In one, she was wearing a pearl necklace and looking into a mirror. In another, she was playing a lute. In the third, she was seated at a writing table, and a maid was handing her what looked like a letter.
You've never seen any of these before?
Calder looked worried.
Never.
Petra had taken off one of her earrings and was rolling it around on the floor.
So how did you dream about something you didn't know existed?
I wonder, Petra said slowly, if paintings that float into your mind on their own are kind of like flying frogs or disappearing people.
You mean your dream might be part of something bigger?
Calder jumped up and got a piece of paper and pencil. He handed them to Petra.
Maybe we should start keeping a record of unexplained stuff.
Petra ducked her head happily over the paper.
Fine.
She began with, Charles Fort, Chief Questioner, Philosopher, Guide.
Hey, there's something else. Did you know I made that F costume because I was thinking F for Fort?
We'll include that.
Calder told Petra about his box, explaining the reason he happened to be looking at the book.
I wonder what made me remember that old thing anyway. If it hadn't popped into my mind, I wouldn't have recognized the geographer at Mrs. Sharp's, and then I would never have read about Vermeer or recognized your costume.
It's Ms. Hussey's fault, Petra said, delighted. It all started with her find some art assignment.
We found it all right.
They spent the next 10 minutes trying to figure out what happened when. Petra wrote, 1. Calder writes about box with geographer on it, same day that Petra finds Lo, writes about it, then dreams about woman. 2. Calder and Petra have lunch, talk about fort. 3. Calder visits Mrs. Sharp and sees geographer, hears about Vermeer. 4. Calder takes book out of library. 5. Petra and Calder make costumes. Petra thinks about Vermeer. Calder thinks about Charles Fort. 6. Halloween. Calder recognizes Petra's costume. Calder was flipping back and forth in the book.
This doesn't tell you too much about Vermeer's life. Do you think we should do some research? I've been wondering if there's some kind of secret code that no one's ever noticed before. I mean, why so many pearls and pens and button thingies?
Good thinking, Petra grinned.
And maybe there's some other crazy connections with Charles Fort, Calder went on. Some facts we might be missing.
We could look in the high school library tomorrow.
Great.
Calder stood up and reached into his pocket. He stirred the pentomino pieces around and pulled one out.
V for Vermeer.
He smiled in a distracted way at Petra, who looked puzzled.
A 1 in 12 chance. Think it's a coincidence?
On the way to school the next morning, Petra asked Calder about the V for Vermeer business.
I told you about the woman. Now you can tell me about these pentominoes. And don't say they're just for making rectangles.
They help me figure things out, began Calder. He looked sideways at Petra. Promise you won't laugh.
Why should I? What could be weirder than my dream?
Well, it seems like the pentominoes kind of talk to me. I'll get the feeling that they want to tell me something, and so I'll grab one, and a word will just pop into my head.
Petra was looking at Calder with interest.
I know, it sounds like a superstitious game, and it probably is. But you're right about Charles Fort. He makes you look carefully at stuff you might have ignored before.
I think it's cool.
Calder smiled gratefully at Petra. He should have known she'd understand. At 3:30 that afternoon, they were sitting behind a stack of books in the library.
Let's begin with dates, okay?
Petra, writing in neat purple ink, started a new page with the heading, Facts About Vermeer. Calder looked at the book in front of him.
Whoa, Petra, get this. Vermeer was baptized on Halloween in 1632. That's the first fact about his life.
Kind of spooky, don't you think? We started writing about him on the same day that his name was first recorded. There are more than 3.5 centuries in between.
Here it is, Calder went on. Johannes, son of Reiner Jantz and Dichne Baltens. Wait, spellings?
Calder paused for a moment while Petra copied the names. He went on.
His father was an innkeeper in Delft, but was also a weaver who manufactured a fine satin cloth called kaffa. Vermeer was an innkeeper, too, and then an art dealer. Let's see. When he was 21, he married Katerina Bolness. Later that year, he was registered as a master painter in the Guild of St. Luke, became a director of the same guild several times, had 11 children. He died in 1675 at age 43.
Petra was writing madly.
Calder turned the page. It looks like he died owing money, and that he wasn't really famous until about 100 years ago.
Huh, he's mysterious. I mean, everything about his life is.
There aren't any records of how he got started or of what money his family lived on. Historians don't know where he worked or who the women and men in his paintings were, whether they were friends or family or what. I read that before. Almost nothing at all is known about him as a person.
Calder looked up.
That's so strange, don't you think? I wonder if someone destroyed his notebooks or letters.
Petra glanced at Calder.
It does seem suspicious and sad, don't you think? These magical scenes that no one will ever know more about.
Calder was reading again.
You know what else? He only signed some of his paintings. I wonder why.
Calder turned the page.
I'd never have done that, he muttered under his breath. Let's find out more about the painting in your dream, he went on. Here it is, a lady writing, and it's in the National Gallery of Art in Washington, D.C. The thing she's wearing is a morning jacket, and it has white fur around the collar and sleeves. Those big earrings are either some kind of fancy glass or pearls. Can you believe it? The oyster that made those would have to have been the size of a football. That's a quill pen, of course. The same chair with the lion's head knobs turns up in other images. And the same jewelry, furniture, even maps and paintings on the walls. I wonder if this is Vermeer's home.
Must have been hard to work with so many kids.
Petra was thinking about how noisy just 5 could be.
Is anything making sense here? Calder asked.
Well, there's the Halloween thing. That's a pretty weird coincidence.
But is there anything else we're missing? A pattern? Numbers?
It seems like there's too much connection here, Petra said slowly. Like Mrs. Sharp knowing about both Vermeer and Charles Fort, you knowing Mrs. Sharp, me reading Mrs. Sharp's book and having that dream right when you were reading about Vermeer, and then the costumes we both made. Do you suppose that ideas overlap like this all the time, and people just don't realize it?
Maybe.
Outside the library, they walked several yards in silence. Calder pulled two packages of peanut M&Ms out of his coat and passed one to Petra.
Thanks, she said, surprised.
What's your favorite? He asked.
The blue ones.
Hey, how about the blue M&M symbolizes secrecy? We can start a collection and each eat one at special times as a sign of our determination to figure this out. It'll be kind of our own private thing.
Hearing himself, Calder stopped. Petra added quickly,
It'll represent us, Charles Fort, and Vermeer. Perfect.
They decided to save the blue M&Ms in Calder's box and keep it under his bed. Petra would hold on to the notebook. At the end of Harper Avenue, they stopped, and both ate an M&M, agreeing that the color blue had a rare and mysterious taste. Chapter 10. Inside the Puzzle. Calder felt restless as he stood in front of the living room window on Wednesday afternoon. It had been 2 days since their trip to the library. Not knowing what to investigate, neither Calder nor Petra had done any further research. Outside, it was pouring rain. The water was running and puddling. As Calder absent-mindedly watched the droplets forming and reforming in shape after shape, an idea came to mind. Of course, it was the obvious next step. He bounded up the stairs, away from his parents talking in the kitchen, and picked up the phone. When Petra answered, he said, Listen, I think we should call the National Gallery and ask if a lady writing is there. You know, to find out if the painting is safe and all that.
Why wouldn't it be there?
Well, I just want to be sure. Maybe Charles Fort's warping my brain, but stories about teleportation and people vanishing into thin air. We should check.
I'll be right over.
Neither Petra nor Calder had ever called a museum before. They flipped a penny about who was going to speak, and Petra dialed. There was a recording with museum hours and information about shows and tours, and then finally a chance to talk to an operator. Petra held the phone at an angle so that Calder could hear too.
National Gallery of Art.
The voice was silky, not young, and very official.
We're calling to find out if a certain Vermeer painting is on the wall right now.
Oh, what picture are you looking for?
Petra made a face at Calder. The voice now had that half-fake cheeriness that some adults get when talking to kids. Petra continued, trying to sound as businesslike as possible.
A lady writing.
Let me check my computer. If the painting is on loan, I can tell you.
Petra and Calder waited, silent, for her to come on again.
Well, yes, the painting is traveling just now. It's in Chicago. There's going to be a show called Writers in Art at the Art Institute.
Petra's and Calder's eyes widened. Calder grabbed the phone, pulling Petra's hair in the process. There was a fierce, whispered, Ow! Followed by a muffled, Sorry.
Excuse me? The woman's voice came on again.
Do you know whether the painting is in Chicago now?
Calder was squeezing the phone receiver so hard that his knuckles stood out. The woman on the other end hesitated.
Well, that's what the computer said. I assume so. It left Washington several days ago, and the show opens next week.
Sensing that the woman was going to ask them what they were doing or whom she was speaking with, Calder said a quick,
Thank you, goodbye,
and hung up.
Holy smokes, Petra.
Petra nodded, silent.
Are you thinking the same thing I am?
She nodded again.
I'm calling the Art Institute, and this time, Calder Pillay, you're not grabbing the phone and ripping out my hair.
After a great deal of waiting and transferring to other lines, the second call told them only that a new show was going up the following week.
Well, it could just be that we're thinking about this stuff because the painting is part of a show here, and we're just picking it up, that's all.
Petra's voice trailed off.
Yeah, but I still feel funny knowing she's traveling, don't you?
Calder said.
Paintings travel all the time, and now we'll actually be able to see her.
Time for a blue one.
They sat cross-legged on the floor, with the geographer between them, arguing about whether the M&Ms they'd picked were the same size. They played a half-hearted game of Monopoly. Calder's mom brought them cookies on dark blue napkins covered with green frogs.
Hey, where did these napkins come from, Mom?
I don't remember, but they're fun, aren't they?
After she left the room, Calder and Petra looked at each other.
Maybe the rain gave the frogs an excuse to drop in, Calder grinned.
Right. Speaking of frogs, any news from New York?
Calder had called Tommy the night before. He'd told Calder he was beginning to wonder if there was a reason that everyone in his neighborhood was so unfriendly. Like there was some huge secret he hadn't figured out. Frog was definitely not around, and no one wanted to tell Tommy why. He admitted to Calder that he might have been a bit dramatic with the kidnapping stuff, but facts were facts. Frog was there one day and gone the next, and no one was talking.
I feel bad not being able to help, Calder said to Petra.
Must be creepy, wondering if you'll be the next kid to go.
Maybe your pentominoes will say something, she suggested.
Calder stirred them around. He pulled out an N. He frowned.
N for what? Calder thought aloud. New York? No. National Gallery? Forget it. A serious case of Vermeer on the brain.
Yeah, it's hard to think about anything else.
After school the next day, Petra raked leaves with her dad, who seemed to be in his own world lately. He never passed the food at meals. He had forgotten to turn off the bathtub a couple of days ago. He tried to put on tiny socks from the socks basket and just looked puzzled when they didn't fit. Now he raked over and over the same spot on the lawn. The grass was pulling up, leaving patches of bare dirt.
Dad?
Petra had stopped working.
Yes?
You okay?
Petra's dad looked at her as if she were on the other side of a closed window. He lifted his hand in a stiff wave.
Fine.
But Petra didn't believe him. What had happened to him? He still went off to work, but he was always distracted. She wished with all her heart she had found the letter that had started this, the one her parents had been arguing about weeks ago. There might have been something she could have done. As her dad headed inside, she heard him mutter,
"Alone. Insane."
Petra's eyes opened wide. Alone? The first thing she thought of was a lady writing. What was her dad talking about? Had he meant money? Or had she heard wrong? Maybe he'd said, "Alone." Either way, it sounded bad. Calder made two pumpkin pies that afternoon with his mom and played three games of solitaire. He helped his dad fold the laundry.
Calder, I need you for something else. Come outside.
Calder's dad was already in his jacket. Calder followed him onto the front walk, noticing with interest all the papers that had collected under the dead plants in their yard. He was remembering the letter about crime and art that Petra had found there and then lost. His dad was squinting up at the outside of the house.
It's time we repainted. Think we should keep the same color?
Yep, Calder said. That's Grandma Ranjana's color, isn't it? Too bad she can't know we're keeping her choice. Why did she like red so much anyway?
Calder's dad laughed.
It's a long story. Something about the artist Vermeer. She wished he'd used more red, because she thought he was the best, but red would have made him perfect.
Weird, Calder said quietly.
He glanced down the block and saw Petra in her yard.
She had on a red hat, a smudge of bright color against the November gray. Sometimes he wished he'd never heard of Fort or Vermeer. Events that were purely accidental were beginning to feel like they fit together, but not in a way he understood or even knew how to think about. It was one thing if you were using a handful of plastic pieces to find solutions to a puzzle. It was another if you felt like you'd fallen inside a puzzle and couldn't get out. Chapter 11, Nightmare. At 7:30 on the morning of November 5th, Calder was hunting for his sneakers. Petra was looking under the living room sofa for the hairbrush. Both reached their kitchens at the same moment. In the Pelé household, Calder's parents were pouring juice, pulling out cold cereal boxes, and talking. Calder caught the words tragic and shocking. "What's the matter?" he asked. In Petra's kitchen, her mom was making cheese sandwiches and talking to her dad. Petra heard her mother say, "How could a thing like this happen? I mean, whose fault is this?" Petra read the headlines. On the front of the Chicago Tribune, in giant letters, were the words, "Vermeer vanishes. Irreplaceable treasure disappears between Washington and Chicago." Petra sat heavily on a kitchen chair and began to read. A 1665 Vermeer painting entitled A Lady Writing was stolen this past weekend when in transit between the National Gallery of Art in Washington, D.C. and the Art Institute of Chicago. The painting was to be the centerpiece of an exhibit to open next week at the Art Institute. A Lady Writing is, according to curators at the National Gallery, of absolutely incalculable worth. One of 35 known works by Dutch artist Johannes Vermeer, it is without doubt one of the most valuable paintings to have been stolen in the 20th century. In an emotional telephone interview, N.B. Jones, the curator in charge of arranging the loan, said, "This is every museum's nightmare. This is an exquisite and fragile painting that needs to be kept in certain atmospheric conditions. It is easily worth millions of dollars, but could never be sold on the black market. It must have been targeted for theft by an individual collector. This is a tragedy of indescribable proportions." According to sources at the Art Institute, the painting arrived with armed guards late yesterday afternoon. When it was unpacked with great excitement by a group of conservators and curators, the case was found to be empty. A printed note was taped to the packing materials. It read, "You will come to agree with me." Every attendant and armed guard who was near the painting from the time it left Washington has been identified and is being held for questioning. Petra could hardly breathe. She had to find Calder. Calder listened to his parents read parts of the article aloud. "I knew it. I knew it," he muttered to himself.
"What's that, Calder? It's upsetting, isn't it?"
Calder's dad peered at him over the paper. As Calder ran down the hall, he heard his father remarking to his mother,
"Must have spelling today."
Calder was down the steps in one leap and running toward Petra's house. He arrived just as she stepped out. One look at each other, and both knew it wasn't necessary to break the news. They sat down on the curb at the end of Petra's walk.
"We knew it, right? We knew ahead of time."
Calder began fiercely tearing up fallen leaves.
"Yeah, but we didn't really know."
Petra's voice was strangled sounding.
"Besides, who would have paid any attention to two kids talking about what sounds like a few coincidences? There's no question now that there's something really creepy going on here, and that we're somehow mixed up in it."
Calder looked at Petra directly for the first time.
"I mean, how could we have just stumbled on all this stuff?"
Petra didn't disagree.
"It sounds nutty to say, but I think the Vermeer woman is depending on us, kind of like she's been waiting for us to catch up."
They were both silent for a moment. Calder stood up.
"So what do we do now?"
what Charles Fort would do. Pay attention and keep our heads.
Ms. Hussey turned up at school that morning with her arm in a sling. She explained that the lights had gone out in her house the night before, and that she'd fallen. What had seemed intriguing just a couple of days ago suddenly felt sinister to both Calder and Petra. Petra's dream painting had been stolen. Petra's dad was acting weird. Calder was worried about Tommy, and now Ms. Hussey was hurt. Petra and Calder looked at each other, silently running through all the things that were going wrong. Who or what would be next? Ms. Hussey had the newspaper under her arm, and the first thing she did was read aloud the article about the Vermeer painting. This started a discussion about art theft and about how thieves sometimes cut canvases out of frames. Ms. Hussey told them about a theft in 1990 at the Isabella Stewart Gardner Museum in Boston. Thieves had dressed as police and had gotten the night security guards to let them in. Then they tied up the guards, turned off the alarms, and stole at least 10 paintings, including a Vermeer and a Rembrandt. Those paintings were still missing. She told them a number of other stories about art thefts. Some of the plotting's ingenious, and some a mess.
We just have to hope, Ms. Hussey said, that this thief is not a professional.
You mean that he'll do something stupid? Calder asked. Something that will give him away?
Or that he or she will crack under the strain of it all, she said, her voice sounding tired. I'm giving you free work time this morning. I don't feel very well.
Most of the class whispered happily or read, seeming to forget about the Vermeer. All day, a book with a full-page reproduction of the lady was propped open against the blackboard. Calder walked by it and was surprised to realize that it was the same book they'd seen Ms. Hussey pay for at Powell's a couple of weeks earlier. The word Calder had seen on the cover hadn't been never. It was part of Netherland. Netherlandish painting. When he told Petra, she got very quiet.
Another coincidence, she said, her voice barely audible. I didn't like the way Ms. Hussey said that thing about cracking under the strain. She looks like she's cracking.
Think we should tell her we've been studying Vermeer, too? It might cheer her up, Calder suggested.
Petra thought for a moment.
No, she said slowly. And I'm not sure why. I think she's in some kind of trouble, and I don't want her to think we've noticed. Otherwise, we won't be able to help.
Petra looked at Calder.
Right. She wouldn't want us to get hurt, too, Calder finished.
Suddenly he remembered the pentomino Denise had kicked under Ms. Hussey's desk. It had been T. T for trouble. Walking home that day, Calder and Petra saw Ms. Hussey cross Harper Avenue and head toward Powell's. They knew exactly what to do. Hurrying to the corner, they looked both ways. There was no one in sight. She must have gone inside.
Maybe we can see something through the front window. Mr. Watch is usually facing the other way. If we walk in the door, she might be right there, Calder said.
Petra nodded. They crept under the window and stood up just enough to peek over the display shelves. Ms. Hussey and Mr. Watch were talking intently, their heads close together. It was frustrating being so close to them and not being able to hear. Petrus and Calder's minds were racing, but in different directions. Calder was going over everything he'd seen Mr. Watch ever do that was puzzling. Why did he spend so much time in the art section of the store? It seemed like he was always straightening books over there. Why had he been so friendly to Mrs. Sharp, walking her to the store before Calder started her deliveries? And were he and Ms. Hussey friends? Petra was wondering what had made Ms. Hussey buy that art book weeks ago, and whether it was just a coincidence. Ms. Hussey was very adventuresome. Had she gotten herself in over her head somehow? Had she really just fallen the night before? Did her injuries have anything to do with a lady writing?
Heading back down their block, Petra and Calder shared their worries. If they had turned around, they would have seen Miss Hussey and Mr. Watch leave the store.